Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, another week of financial education. It's Tate Duryea here, flying solo with you this week as Ryan's tied up. But we're going to be doing a little bit of a different format today. We have an excerpt from our friends over at Hall CPA, Brandon Hall, going through a case study of real estate professional status in tax court by a tugboat captain. So a harbor pilot was going after real estate professional status, got audited, got dragged into a tax court case. And we do a little breakdown today of how he actually won this tax court case. This is someone who had a high-paying W-2 job, very much like pilots, and was able to also qualify as a real estate professional. Now, why does this matter? Well, if you haven't heard about the real estate professional status yet, it's definitely something to key into. It's an amazing strategy. It essentially allows you to take real estate losses against W-2 earned income, ordinary income, which is something that usually you can't do. So let me, ahead of turning it over to Brandon here, I want to set the stage a little bit by explaining what real estate professional status is, where it came from, and why the rules exist like they do today. So we're going to rewind back to 1986. And prior to 1986, you could depreciate real estate. If you bought some rental property, you could depreciate it and you could use those phantom paper losses to offset your income. And a bunch of physicians were doing that and paying no federal income tax. And so in 1986, Congress came along and created the passive activity rules. And it basically said that, hey, if you own rental property, whether you make money or lose money on it, it is now categorized as a passive activity. And what that did was it put up a wall between active income or ordinary income, the kind of income that you make when you go to work, when you work a job. That's active. And passive income for things like, you know, if you invested in someone's business or, you know, and you are a silent partner, that is a passive activity. Well, it grouped real estate, rental real estate, into the passive activity bucket, which means that any of the, you know, gains, losses that you experience inside of your real estate portfolio can't go to offset your ordinary income. Now, that is a big bummer for most of us who make a ton of W-2 money because, you know, you can't, you know, generate a bunch of real estate losses and write it off against your W-2. That's usually what happens when we point out that on a K-1, hey, you're going to get these great phantom losses on this K-1 for this passive investment deal that you might do with Spartan or Turbine. And the unfortunate thing, however, is that you can't take those losses against your ordinary income. Now, if you go out and you buy a rental property, you're going to be in the same boat unless you run it as a short-term rental. And we've talked about that strategy. If you run it as a short-term rental, then there are some rules around that. But that's a way that you can get around the passive activity rules is if the average length of stay is 7 days or less, the IRS says, oh, okay, well, that's more of a trade or business. And we're going to classify this active. But of course, that only applies to that one short-term rental, not your entire real estate portfolio. Real estate professional status is saying, hey, I want to say that I do real estate more than any other activity, and it allows you to break down that wall. Essentially, what happened was about a decade later after the Congress passed the passive activity rules, a bunch of people who do rental real estate as a trade or business got together and said, hey, this isn't fair. We're legitimately participating in this business as our primary means of income. It should be an active thing for us. And so they created some rules around it and said, okay, fine. If you are materially participating and you spend over 750 hours a year in real estate related activities, plus more hours in real estate than you do your ordinary work, your day job, then you can qualify as a real estate pro, real estate professional. Now, pilots are one of the only high-paid W-2 professions that work a low enough number of hours per year to make this strategy possible. If you're a physician, you're working 2,000 hours. You'll hear Brandon talk about that. It's pretty impossible to do 2,001 hours in real estate. But if you're an airline pilot and you're dropping your trips and you might only be flying 65 or 70 hours a month, it's very possible that you could do more hours in real estate related activities And if you want to learn more about this, you can go back to episode number 75. We had Brendan Hall talking about the real estate professional status classification. And so we go through it on that episode. It's definitely a great listen. It's about 50 minutes long, but this is a great case study on the nuts and bolts of how it actually works. I will point out one more thing, and that is that Brandon is just talking about you as the individual, you as a single person, working your airline job and then trying to do more hours on the side doing real estate than you are flying. If you are married and your spouse can qualify as the real estate professional, then you don't even have to worry about it because your spouse can do 750 hours per year and you can do none. And then you both get the real estate professional status. So this is how personally my wife and I claim real estate professional status. She happens to be a realtor. So she does the 750 hours. There's also a 500 hour material participation test. You can split that 500. So her and I split that 500 throughout the year working on our rentals. And we are real estate professionals. Legitimately, we do more work in real estate throughout the year than we do in W-2. And because of that, we pay very little in taxes, which is wonderful. So with that, I'm going to turn the mic over to Brandon to go through this case study with a harbor pilot who actually achieved this.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
What if I told you that you could work a full-time job and still qualify as a real estate professional, which would enable you to use rental losses to offset your W-2 income and save a ton of money on taxes? I'm a CPA and I work with a lot of real estate investors, and oftentimes real estate professional status is the number one thing that real estate investors want to talk about. Because rental losses by default are passive, and passive losses can only offset passive income. But W-2 income and business income is active income. It's not passive income. So rental losses can't offset the active income that we earn from our job or from our businesses, unless, of course, we qualify as a real estate professional. To qualify as a real estate professional, we have to spend 750 hours in real property trades or businesses, and we have to spend more time in real property trades or businesses than we do at our day job. So how then can you work a full-time job and still say that you spent more time in real estate than you did at your W-2 job? There's many tax court cases that say that that's not possible. The IRS doesn't buy it, and neither does the tax court. They don't believe that you can spend more time working in real estate, an additional 2,001 hours on top of your full-time job hours of 2,000 hours. They don't believe it's possible to work 4,000 plus hours during the year. But there's a tax court case that we're going to review in this video today where the taxpayer did just that. But there is a little caveat that I'm not going to reveal quite yet. So let's dive into the case and see what we have going on. So to give you a little bit of background on the case, this was decided back in 2011, and it's about a boat pilot who had a bunch of rental properties and used the rental losses to offset his W-2 income from the boat pilot activities. The IRS said you can't qualify as a real estate professional when you have a W-2 job. So they audited him and he disagreed with their findings. So they all went to tax court to battle it out. Now, thanks to the fact that this went to tax court, we get a full opinion and we get to see all the details about Mr. Miller and the management of his rental properties. We also get to see why the IRS disagreed with why he qualifies as a real estate professional and why he thinks that he qualifies as a real estate professional. So let's dig into it a little bit. So this is the first page. You can see it's TC Memo 2011-2019. That's just a citation that you can use if you want to search it and learn a little bit more about it. And here's some background on Mr. Miller. So you can see here that he took a job with a tugboat company and it allowed him to live in the San Francisco Bay Area. And he would actually go out to the vessels coming into the San Francisco Bay and he would pilot them. Like they'd be like large container ships, passenger cruises, and large military ships. And he would pilot them from 13 miles at sea outside the San Francisco Bay Channel and then throughout San Francisco. So he was essentially bringing them into the San Francisco Bay, just the local pilot that navigates the local waters. So you can see here that his schedule as a pilot required him to work 7 days on and then he'd had 7 days off. But here's the kicker. he generally is not required to actually work for all of his 7 days on. So his schedule is pretty flexible and predictable. And that's the big kicker with working a full-time job, but still qualifying as real estate pro. And that's essentially what this entire tax court case boils down to. The fact that Mr. Miller had a pretty flexible schedule and really wasn't working 2,000 hours a year, even though he was being paid as a full-time employee. Oftentimes, we'll have conversations with physicians, for example, that will say, hey, I'm 7 days on and 7 days off. And does that enable me to qualify as a real estate professional because I'm spending half of my time off and working in real estate? And the answer to that question is really, how many hours are you working during your 7 days on? Because if you're still getting to a full 2,000 hours a year working at your W-2 job, or $2,000 or more a year working at your W-2 job, you still have to exceed the total working time in real estate. But the interesting thing here about the Miller case is that even though he was 7 days on and then 7 days off, during the 7 days on, he still wasn't working all of those 7 days. So he didn't really work a full-time job, even though he was paid as a full-time employee. The distinction that I'm trying to make here is that it doesn't matter if your job is considered full-time or part-time, or if you're paid as a full-time employee or a part-time employee, or if you're 7 days on and 7 days off, or 1 month on and 1 month off, that doesn't matter. All that matters for real estate professional status is, did you spend more hours working on your rentals than you did at your W-2 job? And if the answer is yes, then you can qualify as a real estate pro, assuming you also meet the 750-hour requirement. We start to see that he had a very big interest in building, and he acquired his general contractor's license as well. So you'll see here that he provides a lot of the services, not only to his clients, but also to himself. He owned 6 rentals during 2005 and during 2006, which were the years in question. And though he conceded that one of the properties he did not materially participate in, he did claim that the other properties he was materially participating, he was a real estate professional, and they should not be passive activity losses. And now we can look at exactly what was Mr. Miller doing with his rentals. So he was preparing the leases. He would collect the rents. He would spend a substantial amount of time researching and bidding on various rental properties. He would create timesheets and detail all of his time spent in the construction business too. So remember, he was doing a lot of the construction stuff too. He performed his maintenance work himself, which was, to be honest with you, pretty significant maintenance work. And he performed repairs as well, all by himself, including to the fence, the washing machine, garbage disposal, and back door. And here we go again. He's again doing a lot of the maintenance himself, managing the tenants himself, installing carpet himself. So Mr. Miller here is doing quite a lot by himself. He's not contracting this out. He's doing it himself. He's buying the materials. He's performing the labor all by himself. So it's becoming, you know, in the court's eyes, pretty easy to see that Mr. Miller is significantly engaged in his rental real estate activities. But we still have the question of, did he spend more time in rental real estate than he did his boat piloting job? Because even though we've already kind of talked about it here, we haven't gotten to that point of the opinion yet. So the tax court still has to decide that fact. And here's where we start to see a little bit more about how Mr. Miller works. So he has witnesses that describe him as a workaholic who worked on the home after his piloting job and performed manual labor alongside him for each project on the property. You can also see other witnesses describe Mr. Miller's work ethic as extraordinary. A friend pilot and partner of him said he has a 1 in a million work ethic. So if you can have a friend come and testify to the fact that you have a 1 in a million work ethic, it might go in your favor if you ever face tax court. And here you go. His wife says that she had to go to the construction sites just to spend some time with her husband. Not 100% sure how that impacts a marriage, but from a tax perspective, definitely works in Mr. Miller's favor. So now we get to the opinion, and you can see that they have to figure out, did he spend more time on his construction and rental real estate activities than on piloting, and whether he and his wife materially participated in certain real estate activities to enable them to deduct the real estate losses for the year. Now, we've been talking about real estate professional status on this video, so 750 hours and more time in real estate than anywhere else. That enables you to qualify as real estate pro, but you still have to materially participate in order to make the rental losses non-passive. Sometimes we run into the issue where we have a client that is a real estate pro. They're like a real estate agent or broker, or they're a flipper or developer. And through that activity, they meet the 750-hour test and the more time in real estate than anywhere else test, but they forget to materially participate in their rentals. So if you qualify as real estate pro on like a non-rental real estate business, you still have to go and materially participate in your rentals. Otherwise, they're still passive activities. So just don't forget that fact, because we see a lot of people forget that from time to time, and it can really blow up in your face in the event that you're audited by the IRS. Here's a quick call out to the losses that were at stake, $71,000 and $143,000 in the 2 years at issue. I didn't mention that before, but did want to call that out just so you can understand how much money was at stake. And here's where the decision starts. So they decided that they found that he did establish that he spent more than 750 hours performing significant construction work as a contractor on his own rental real estate activities. They also found that he spent more time on his construction work and his rental properties combined. So this is construction work and rental properties. Remember, he was doing construction for third parties plus his own rental properties. So spending more time on his construction work and his rental properties than he did piloting vessels. So there you go. So he met the 750-hour test and he met the spend more time in real estate than anywhere else test. So he is a real estate professional. But then we have to figure out, did he materially participate? So in order to assess material participation, this is something interesting to keep in mind. You have to materially participate in each rental property separately, right here, separately, unless you make an election to treat all interests in real estate as one single activity. And this is actually something that we see a lot of accountants miss. So what I mean by that is we've been helping inbound IRS audits. So real estate investors that are being audited by the IRS are calling us up and saying, hey, I'm a real estate professional, or I've got the short-term rental loophole and I need some help because I'm being audited and I'm not 100% sure if my current accountant is capable of defending me. One of the first questions we ask is, did your accountant make a grouping election? For long-term rentals, the grouping election is under regs 1.469-9G. And for short-term rentals, the grouping election is under regs 1.469-4. If your accountant doesn't make that grouping election, then you have to meet the material participation test in each rental separately. And that means spending 100 hours and more than anyone else in each rental separately, or 500 hours and more than anyone else in, well, I guess just 500 hours in each rental separately. So it's really important to assess, should you be making that grouping election? Because once you make the grouping election, you can meet that 500-hour test across all of your rentals because they're treated as one for the purposes of material participation. If you don't make the grouping election and if you don't materially participate in each rental separately, the IRS can say, gotcha, too bad, so sad, you lose, and there's really nothing that you can do about it. So really important to, again, pay attention to that grouping election on an ongoing basis. So here we can see the definitions of material participation. I'm not going to go through all that just in the interest of time, but they do call out the 100 hours and more than anyone else test. But there's also several other material participation tests. There's seven in total. You just have to meet one of the seven tests in order to materially participate in the activity. And here you can see the court saying, we are satisfied that they materially participated in the Pepper Road property, but we are not satisfied that they've materially participated in the Morning Glory property, the Lind property, and some of their other properties. So this is a partial win for the taxpayer because they did prove that they were a real estate professional, even though they had a full-time job, but they failed to show that they materially participated in all of their rental activities. So if you're listening to this, the point that I want you to take away is you can qualify as a real estate professional, even with a full-time job. But what really matters is how many hours did you spend working in your job or your business, and how many hours did you spend working in real estate businesses and on your own real estate portfolio? And you can group the real estate business and the rentals together. You saw Mr. Miller, he had a construction business and he was managing his rentals. They looked at that time that he spent in the construction business and the real estate rentals as a whole, okay? So you can look at all of the real estate activities and combine them for the purposes of qualifying as a real estate professional, meeting the 750-hour test and the more time than anywhere else test. But just again, really important to understand, it's not about how many days on, how many days off. What it's about is how many hours did you spend in your W-2 job or in your non-real estate business compared to how many hours did you spend in your real estate business. And you have to spend more hours in your real estate business than you do in your non-real estate business in order to qualify as a real estate pro. So I hope that this helps anybody that might be working a full-time job, but not actually putting in full-time hours. And if you need any help, feel free to contact us. We've got links below in the description.
All right. So I hope that helped you to understand some of the nuts and bolts of how real estate professional status works in practice and how it would actually go down in a court case. In addition to just logging simply those hours, as much evidence as possible that you can maintain in order to prove that you're a real estate pro, that you're out there doing the work, that you're spending the time. And if you need a CPA to help you out, you know, we would not advise any of our listeners to try and do this completely solo, especially if you're using TurboTax. I would definitely, if you're going to use some of these more advanced strategies, work with a great CPA team. We've had great success with Hall. You know, there's plenty of them out there, but I personally do my tax strategy with Hall. And if you're going to use, like I said, one of these more advanced tax strategies, it's a good idea to partner up with a CPA firm who can keep you honest month after month, quarter after quarter, rather than trying to clean things up retroactively. So with that, I hope you found some value out of this episode. We'll see you on the next one.